It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? TikTok, more like causing your teen to develop a tick. Talk. At 1:30, conference realignment continues to play out, adding fuel to the speculation for when all of this goes down. And in mere minutes, it is our weekly chat with the great Justin Wells of IT and On3. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two on a Wednesday off week for Texas. We're trying to calculate everything, compute everything, figure out what's going on with this team at 4-3. And if you missed it earlier, we went over some of those one-score numbers. Steve Sarkisian's now been involved in 30 of them as a head coach, 16-14. Since 2017, since the beginning of Tom Herman, Texas 14-15 in one-score games. When I saw that stat pop up during the game that more than any other FBS team in conference since 2017, they've been in more one-score games, I decided to look up some of those numbers. We talked about that. We talked about Baker Mayfield. He's out for tomorrow night against Denver. That's Cleveland and Denver to get your week started in week 7 of the NFL. So if you're a fantasy owner and you have Cleveland Browns to deal with, you may want to realize that Case Keenum is the quarterback of that football team tomorrow night. All right, let's get to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline because there's a lot of Longhorn stuff to get into, and we do have to make him smile at the end about his Cowboys, too. Justin Wells, Inside Texas, on3.com, at JustinWells2424. Justin, how are you?
Hey, now, I'm enjoying this football weather in East Texas, my brothers. How are you guys doing?
Man, we're doing well. Just trying to unpack everything, getting a rare off week for both the Longhorns and the Cowboys. I can't ever remembering those two things lining up at the same week. So we're able to kind of take a breath and try to figure some stuff out. Let's go ahead and start with the game day atmosphere part of this thing. You guys at Inside Texas and On3.com obviously cover a lot of recruiting. Give me a quick thought on Arch Manning, recruiting visit, that group that came into town. How did all of that go on Saturday?
Yeah, well, that was, besides the loss, everything else was great. And if you talk to enough of the recruits, they'll tell you the loss was, people, it's hard for fans to understand that, they live and die with each game, each weekend, each Saturday. Players don't do that. Prospects don't do that. They view the game through a much different scope. And believe it or not, they're much more measured in their takes when it comes to what happens on the field. If a team plays really well and they win, then that's great. There's a good time to be had. If they don't play well, then often kids see opportunities on the field. They see, well, they're close, but they just need a couple more players. Maybe I can be that player. Saturday was beautiful. The weather was perfect. The atmosphere was perfect. Everything was really lined up for the University of Texas. Let's start with Arch Manning. When you bring in, the prince of quarterbacking in Americana football, that's Arch Manning. And he showed up from Isadore Newman High School in New Orleans. He was there for the weekend. He came in on a Friday, left on a Sunday, came in with teammate and four-star tight end Will Randall. And when I talked to Randall, who also holds a Texas offer, he told me that one of the things they noticed and talked to Sark about was, how Texas needs to finish, getting better, stacking that roster up, getting stronger. And so despite the loss, the weekend of recruiting went really well. The top receiver in the United States in 2022, Evan Stewart out of Frisco Liberty, he was there. He stayed a little late after. He got to hang out with Xavier Worthy and some of the Longhorns. Jonte Cook, one of the best wide receivers in the country for 2023, he was on campus, and he got to hang out with a bunch of them as well. And then you had some official visitors from out of state, just caught up with Todd Beamer High School in Tacoma, Washington, offensive lineman Malik Ogbo. He had an absolute blast. I think Texas really put themselves in a good position with him. Quincy Wiggins out of Madison Prep down in Baton Rouge. He had a great time as well. Larry Turner Gooden out of Bishop Alamy in California. Al Manny, he was there as well. So it was a really good circumstance. Everything that you would want to happen as a Texas fan or Texas recruit happened except for the loss. It was another blown lead. It was a close game. It was one of those that I'm sure we're going to talk about with the next question. But when you ask recruits, they don't take it game by game. You know, fans think, well, they lost to OU and you know, they blew a big lead. Recruits don't view it that way. They view either as, hey, they won, that's a good time, or they view it as, hey, they lost, there's some opportunities there to help them out. And oftentimes losing actually helps with recruits because they do see that opportunity. They do see the chance for early playing time. And if you're recruiting high school guys and you're talking early playing time, you've got an advantage. And so everything Saturday, except for the loss, was perfect from a Texas standpoint. The weather, the atmosphere, the environment, it was a really good time. And I think most recruits came away with with more hope of the Texas football program moving forward.
Justin, what is the most concerning thing for you coming off of a second straight multi-score lead that Texas really lets melt away in the final quarter of the game?
On which side of the ball?
Let's start on offense.
Let's start on offense. Okay. In the first half, I think the game plan is outstanding. I think the script plays are great. I think everything goes. If Sark's got one thing going for him right now early, these guys are ready. They're prepared. They come to fight every Saturday morning, no matter if it's an 11 a.m., 2:30, or 6 o'clock kickoff. These guys come prepared and they come ready. They play really good first half. In the second half, defenses start to figure out it's the Bijan Robinson show. And so they're already keying on Bijan to begin with. But now, if you'll notice in the second half of these last few games, they're literally putting 9 players in the box. They're literally doing that. And there's one way to fix that, and that's to throw it over the top. And if your offense can't go vertical, if they can't throw the football down the field consistently, this will be the result every Saturday. Teams are adjusting in the second half. This offense has to adjust in the second half. The quarterback position has to be able to throw the football down the field consistently. It doesn't matter how well they play in the first half. If they can't carry that over and make adjustments, and because defenses are starting to figure this out, this is what we've written and talked about for the last few months at Inside Texas. They will start figuring out the quarterback at Texas. They will start to figure out what they can do and what they can't do. And that's what we're seeing in the second half of the last few games, especially in the Big 12, is that Texas in the second half, their offense, they don't make the adjustments. And when you're putting 9 guys in the box, you're literally daring the other team to throw the football vertically. And until Texas can establish a quarterback that can get the ball down the field vertically, I think this is going to be an issue throughout the season. On the defensive side, some of it is a carryover. Look, against Oklahoma State, they played great for 3 quarters. Against OU, I feel like they played really good for the first half. I think there is an example of them being on the field a little too long. I think you're starting to see that time of possession the last 2 games really start to knock down the Texas defense. This is wearing these guys out. And if that means more rotation, if that means finding guys in different spots for, you know, different situations and games, so be it. But the defense, they played a good game on Saturday. They just got wore out. And toward, you could tell by the last few plays of the game, it was the same thing against OU. These guys are dragging. So either we need fresh legs, fresh scheme, you know, change up something. Something has to adjust. And I think some of that's on the offense. If you don't have 6 out of 8 plays, 8 drives go 3 and out, your defense doesn't have to be on the field for, you know, so much more of the time. I think it's a carryover. So I think if you can get the problems fixed on offense in the second half, I think you'll see a carryover to the problems they're having on the defense. And I think those two can help themselves out. And this bye week is a perfect opportunity to figure that out because Baylor is a well-coached team, and they will be prepared Saturday after next.
And they're a physical football team as well, which means that you're going to be worn out throughout the course of the game. I love the answers that you just gave here. I want to get back to the offense for a second, Justin, because you're absolutely right. This team needs to be able to throw the football in the second half to open things up for Bijan Robinson, Roschon Johnson, Keelan Robinson, whoever is back there for the Horns. Most likely going to be Bijan, of course. The problem is that they are one major receiver down with Jordan Whittington potentially missing the rest of the year with that broken clavicle. Who is that guy? I guess we asked about, or you talked about, Kelvonte Dixon last weekend, and I saw him out there a little bit. Is there some reluctance for the coaches to lean on him a little bit more right now? And if so, I mean, who are they turning to be that that option B to Xavier Worthy?
I think they're looking for that guy to step up, Trey. I think they wanted to see some of that from Marcus Washington on Saturday. I think they saw some of that from Kelvonte Dixon, who almost caught a touchdown pass. I'm not sure why there wasn't a pass interference call, but the guy not only ran into him, he ran him out of bounds, and Mucci still caught the football. This is a kid that can make plays, and so you got to see a little bit of what I was talking about with Kelvonte as well. I think this staff just wants guys to step up. They want certain guys like a Marcus Washington to help out with Xavier, because Xavier's going to be another guy that, don't forget, you're relying on a true freshman that might weigh 160 pounds. And so when defenses start to figure that out, they're going to cloud that area. They're going to slide a safety on that side, and they're going to force you to go to the other weapons. And that's where you've got, and that's where I like where they move Bijan Robinson, you know, into the, you know, out of the, you know, they throw to him and Keelan in the flat. I think those are things that keeps a defense honest. But ultimately, a wide receiver is going to have to step up via a Joshua Moore, a Marcus Washington, a Kelvonte Dixon. One of these guys is going to have to step up, especially on these third downs, make big catches, make big plays, and move the chain. And once they do that, that's when the confidence starts clicking in. And it's not just from that receiver. You'll start getting the confidence from the play caller, from the quarterback. It goes all the way to the top. And so you just got to start hitting on some of those plays. And I think this offense is more than capable of doing it. We've seen them do it in the first half. They can move the football. It just has to be, you know, they're going to have to adjust somewhat in the second half. And one of those other receivers, not named Jordan Whittington, is going to have to step up via either Marcus Washington, Joshua Moore, Kelvonte Dixon. Somebody's got to help out Xavier, and it's got to help out the quarterback position.
Talking with Justin Wells, Inside Texas on 3.com. And again, he's on Twitter at JustinWells2424. Justin, a lot of offensive discussions can be had, but if this team doesn't block any better, it is not going to matter. When I hear Coach Sark talk about this offensive line and basically telling his fans that it's going to be a shuffle the rest of the year, anybody who knows football knows that's not a good idea. And they know it's not, clearly he's trying to protect some of these kids, and I totally get it. But what do you think we're going to see these next few weeks? You mentioned Baylor and their physicality. We know what's coming here. What kind of 5-week run do you think we're going to see for this offensive line? Because it's looking rough right now. I don't know what's the next option for him.
The offensive line is one of those positions, and I don't want to put this all on Casey Thompson or on the offense, but the offensive line's got to play better, and that goes without saying. But you need consistency. There's been so many rotations. There's been so many guys move from guard to tackle, tackle to guard, to where there's not a lot of fluidity. There's not a lot of consistency there.
Right.
That's a big thing with offensive linemen, because they need to know the guy beside them to their left and to the right what they're doing. They really do. They all move in sync. What's that best combination of five? I don't know yet. I think Kyle Flood and Steve Sarkisian look at that every single day. I think they've been looking at that every day since spring ball, and they've been trying to find the best mixture of guys. Right now, that remains to be seen. I think they're still trying to put together that puzzle, the best five guys on the field. Sometimes the best five at running the football may be different than the five best at passing the ball. And that's kind of a conundrum. That's a way to go backwards. And so you got to figure that out. You got to figure the best mixture of five guys that fit in that rotation. These are young guys as well. And this is something that I think, like you said, Sark's protecting these guys. He's trying to get the most out of this group. But he also has some really young guys on that line. I like that he was starting off with Denzel Okafor, who's been there. He's a guy that's got a lot of experience otherwise, but then he got hurt. I like that he went with Tope Amade, another guy that had a lot of experience, a six-year senior, you know, trying to get him some opportunities, some reps as well. And he you know, played well in spurts. And so right now you're seeing them trying to figure out where each piece goes. And that's a puzzle that we can't solve. Fans can't solve it. Only Kyle Flood and Steve Sarkisian can solve that. And right now I feel like that's probably one of the most important things they're working on and looking at over the next 2 weeks before Baylor. Because like you said, Baylor's physical.
Yeah.
Baylor has an identity. They know exactly who they are, and they know exactly what they can and cannot do. Dave Aranda has done a tremendous job in Waco. Give that guy a ton of credit. They're getting the most out of that group. And Texas has more talent. That's not a question. But it's a question of identity, consistency, knowing what the other is going to do, and adjustments half to half. And right now, I think Baylor does a better job of that. And so this offensive line, you got 2 weeks to try to figure out your best five going forward. Because when they get to Waco, those guys are going to be ready. They're going to be playing a Baylor team with confidence and a team that knows that they're in the hunt for the Big 12 championship game. So Texas is going to have to bring it. That's a good Baylor team. And finding that first five on the field for offensive line, that to me feels like it might be the most important step within this next 2 weeks.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Justin, before we let you go, for those people out there that love their Longhorns and love their Cowboys, let's end it with a smile. What'd you think of the Cowboys getting a tough, hard-fought, wasn't perfect, but a hard-fought win at New England?
That New England game is easily my favorite win this season because everything went against Dallas that could go against Dallas. From bogus penalties to turnovers to safeties not making plays, that entire game was a microcosm of each NFL season where you have a couple weeks where everything goes wrong and you have every reason to quit and pack it up, and they didn't. This is a different group, Chad. We've been talking about this. This is a different group. I was worried about the defense, and I still feel like there's some holes there. But as a team, these guys don't quit. There's a supreme confidence in the offense, which should be. And if Connor Williams doesn't have silly penalties, I think this game doesn't even go into overtime.
Yeah.
But give the Cowboys a ton of credit. Dak Prescott is an elite quarterback, and he's doing elite things. They're doing it with so many different parts. They're not just relying on Zeke. You're getting doses of of Tony Pollard. You're getting CeeDee Lamb stepping up to that next level. Amari Cooper doesn't have to be the guy. CeeDee Lamb says, you can play me. I'll do it. You know, and wait till they get a Michael Gallup back. They're still missing a couple guys. And so I think the offense is really what's keeping this team going. And then on the defensive side, when you've got the early leader for NFL Defensive Player of the Year in Trayvon Diggs, I mean, this guy gets an interception every Sunday. It's a habit, and it's one of those habits you don't want to knock. It's an incredible habit. I love it. The guy makes plays. That pick six in the second half was one of the biggest plays I've seen the Cowboys in 20 years. This team doesn't quit. I love it. The NFC is wide open, and the NFC East is less than. All they have to do is run through their division, keep that record straight, and I think Dallas has got – I think they're putting together a run this year, guys. I think the Cowboys have that team. I didn't want to say that last month because I didn't really know this. Now I think we've got enough of a sample size to see Dallas is legit this year. The Cowboys are going to be good. I can't wait to see what the second half of the season presents. But trust me, that Patriots win, that was the biggest win of the year in my opinion.
Going to be fun to see how it plays out. Cowboys and Longhorns taking a little breather before the rest of the season gets going. That's Justin Wells. Go to InsideTexas.com, On3.com as well for all your Longhorn stuff, at JustinWells2424 on Twitter. Justin, we appreciate it, man. We will talk to you next week and get ready for Baylor.
Nothing but love.
Thanks, brother.
Good stuff there, as always. We talk to Justin every Wednesday about that time. Up next, let's talk more college football. What starts with Texas and Oklahoma could end with UTSA and Rice. We'll explain on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Take it one time for me. Oh, shake it, baby. Shake it one time for me. I done found me a woman. Shake like the leaf shaking on the tree. Well, you went away, baby. Got back a little too late.
Some of those songs, you're like, and? What's next? What's coming next? Who is it, Trey?
Friend of the show, Bobby Rush. Shake It For Me.
Ah, Bobby Rush. Very good. Great guitar work. That's good stuff. The whole
harmonica
like
action too.
The whole singer songwriter thing I love at all of its levels. The pop version of it, the folk version, the country version, but the blues version, I really love those moments. Lonely room on the stage, you strip it all away, and it's like well picked acoustic guitar and a sad ass blues song or a badass blues song. I love that, man. That's one of my favorite things in music. That's really good. And that guitar sounded great. Trey found a blues list today. We've had the Black Angels. There's a little Bobby Rush for you. We'll get you some more stuff as we go along today. Hope you are having a good one. Justin Wells from Inside Texas just joined us. We'll hit the cowboy angle and some more Longhorn stuff with Ari Temkin of the Cowboys Radio Network. But remember, he also does Big 12 Radio on Sirius XM. So we'll ask about the Longhorn football team. Plus, he's covering Big 12 basketball media days right now, and Texas is top five AP. Ari went to Kansas and knows his basketball pretty well, so we'll get his thoughts on the top of the Big 12. The media says it's Kansas, then Texas at the top. We will see. A lot of stuff going on today. College football-wise, we have, I don't even know how you want to phrase this, maybe dominoes lining up. They just haven't been pushed over yet, but Trey, I thought it'd be a good idea to kind of update ourselves, but everybody else, on where it all is on conference realignment. Because we know what's coming. It's just about when does it all get started. So, level one, Texas and OU are going to the SEC. We know that. Level two is the Big 12 is going to stay alive because Cincinnati, see if I get it right, UCF, BYU, and who am I missing? Houston.
Yep.
And Houston are all coming to the Big 12. So that gets us to level three, because that rips three teams away from the AAC, the AAC, the American Athletic Conference. But they're ready, Trey, because they've got six teams that are ready to send them an application, which, let's do the math, they're sitting at 11. You lose three, that's eight. If you add six, that gets you to 14. So they'll have 14 for football and basketball. Here's the six. Florida Atlantic, Charlotte,
ew,
I know, UAB,
ew,
and these three teams from the great state of Texas, North Texas, UTSA, who's ranked right now, and Rice. So basically this move would basically take a, you know, in, if you're a fan of like Gladiator, remember the movie Gladiator? That stab at the end of that movie, spoiler alert, the stab, the Phoenix to what's his name, stab, or if you're a Batman fan in The Dark Knight Rises, the stab that Bruce/Batman took towards the end of that one, this would be the stab to the Conference USA. And they're pretty much, I guess, going to bleed out at this point. I don't know what happens to Conference USA, because all six of those teams I just mentioned are Conference USA teams.
Well, they'll poach from the Southland Conference now,
I guess.
Just a reshuffling of chairs from crap conferences, right?
Hey, you better be careful on that one, though, because some of those Southland teams have already moved. Sam, SFA, Tarleton, and a couple others have already gone to this new weird WAC/something-I-don't-even-understand conference. SFA has a conference game, Trey, this weekend with Dixie State out in Utah. I couldn't make that up if I wanted to.
Man, I know that conference realignment matters just for everything that's happening with that sport over the next couple of years. When you start getting to some of these secondary conferences, though, and the teams that are about to be in these conferences, I don't know if I could care any less.
It is so bizarre.
Especially with the teams you just listed off there. And I'm happy for Jeff Traylor that UTSA is doing better, and they're about to upgrade conference-wise. And it is a slight upgrade going from Conference USA to the AAC. It's just a bunch of teams that are pretty insignificant in the grand scheme.
But
right?
See, for them, though, see, you're thinking of it as a Texas fan. It's clearly not on that level. What I wonder is, if I'm a UTSA fan, if I'm a North Texas fan, does the idea that North Texas, UTSA, Rice, and SMU are all going to be in the same conference? You'll have trips there in Texas. You'll be able to go to, like, does Birmingham interest you as a trip? Forget about the team. Charlotte. Does that interest you as a trip? FAU gets you Orlando, right? You could do a Disney trip if you go at FAU. For you and me, FBS fans, Power 5 fans, it's a different discussion. But if you're already that, you're at that level and you understand where you are, and I'm a Rice fan, do I maybe like some of that? I don't know. That's what I've been trying to figure out all day. Like, on that level, I'm not, and that sounds like I'm belittling them as I'm asking. I know, but.
Look, if we're talking about Rice people in Disney World, I am choosing to believe that Rice people know better than to surround themselves with the lowest common denominator walking around Disney World. Man. A day or two before that game.
Dude, we need to have a documentary called Rice People Go to Disney World. Do you realize how much we'd get fixed at Disney World if we could send Rice grads over there? That'd be awesome.
Well, either that or they would warn other Rice grads not to go.
No, but what I'm saying is we just charge them with go and check it out, and then we'll have you report to Disney at the end of the day. They'll have that place figured out in 2 days.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They'll start requiring IQ tests and BMI scores to report it before people buy tickets.
Okay, yeah, now then sales would go way down. Never mind. You can't do that. But now, okay, so they've applied. Let's get to the big picture here, which I think everybody can kind of latch on to. You and I both want next year to be the year, 2022.
I accepted this about a month ago, that wasn't going to happen. As soon as the Big 12 made the announcement for their four schools and that they would be joining in 23, that's the year that I have circled now for Texas and OU to join the SEC.
Yeah, I hate to admit it because I really was. I was probably being a little bit of an egotistical SEC fan, first one. It's the first one the conference has had. Hmm. But I really thought that all those lawyers plus the lawyers for UT and all the people that cared, I thought they could make moves. I thought they could push this through. Because you've heard the comments from the commissioner of the AAC is, oh, if the money's right, we'll talk about whenever you want to. He's ready to roll. So I'm just wondering if all of this shaking and moving and posturing, you know, helps the idea of Texas and OU going quicker. Or I'm seeing this story from Heather Dinich, who does great work for ESPN, and she keeps laying out 2023. So I think we all may have to get used to Texas and Oklahoma eating one more year of Big 12, roll your eyes, what are the officials going to call on us this time, football. I think you're going to have to maybe do that for one more year.
And I think the reason why it's happening like that is that because that allows all sides to have the cleanest break. Texas and OU need to be okay with that because there's a good chance that they won't know anything to the Big 12 when they choose to leave for the SEC because the Big 12 is setting itself up with these other schools, and you're seeing that cascade effect elsewhere around the country, in the AAC and Conference USA, whatever conferences end up getting involved with this reshuffle right now. It just was going to take that extra year, especially once the Pac-12, Big Ten, and ACC decided to drag their feet on playoff expansion. Hmm. Once they started asking questions and saying, well, I don't know if this is best for everybody, more postseason spots, that could really screw us, even though there is absolutely nothing to that supposed logic. At that point, you realize that they were going to have to slow things down by at least that single season. I'm glad we're not talking about like 2024 at this point, because that was always a possibility too. But when the Big 12 basically came out and said, well, we're going to replace you with these guys in 2023 without saying as much, that's when I felt more comfortable with that 23 timeline.
But let's just hope that 23 and 24, we don't get told later is, oh, no, Texas and Oklahoma and Cincinnati and UCF, they got to play in a conference for two more years.
Texas and Oklahoma will not allow that.
I would hope.
At that point, if it comes down to them having to pay the Big 12 money, they will do that. Texas and Oklahoma will not be in the Big 12 in 23.
Yeah, that's the one thing I also want to see out of this. Between Texas, Oklahoma, there's four monsters here. Texas, Oklahoma, the SEC, and ESPN. If those four monsters don't figure out a way to cut a check when it's time to cut a check, I'm going to be highly disappointed. At some point, you got to realize you owe the Big 12 money. Somebody pay them and move on. Be a big boy and use your big checkbook. That has to happen along the way. I do not want to hear dragging stories of, well, they're negotiating, well, they're looking at it, well, they're... No, man, you got to go through 24, all the way through that 24 season. You owe them that money at some point. Figure out what it is, figure out the time period, and then cut the check. ESPN should cut it for them. That would be the big boy way to do it, I think. Because ESPN owes Texas money. from LA Chen.
Mm-hmm.
Let them cut the money, take it off of that, and then you move forward. But I will give credit to the Big 12 for not just going away and crawling away and dying. Credit to the AAC for not crawling away and dying. Now, Trey, on a smaller level, will the Conference USA stand up and say, we're not dead yet. We've got teams ready to apply. Will that happen?
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to grab Northern Illinois and Temple and all sorts of other fun, mediocre football schools.
I think Northern Illinois is probably happy in the MAC. Aren't they a MAC team? Isn't that what they are?
I don't know.
Is somebody going to raid the MAC? Is that what's about to happen?
For somebody that follows college football fairly closely, I don't really pay any attention to the G5 schools.
Oh, I'll be honest with you. I do not know what the next conference that could feed Conference USA is. And the only reason I know that those six teams are in Conference USA is because I read it today.
Patriot League.
To remind myself. Yeah, right.
Is Patriot a football league, too? I know it's a basketball league.
I think it is. I think they have teams there as well. But those are the teams to look for. So if you or someone you know is involved in North Texas, UTSA, or Rice, you may end up as ACC members pretty quick. So that'd make Rice and SMU a conference game again. And our guy that Jeff Ward was talking about yesterday, the fake recruit that snuck into the A&M game, he would now be in the AAC if he wanted to. He could tell a real story about the AAC, not a fake story about being a Mexican kicker.
Yeah, I love how you guys were saying that he wasn't breaking a law. Like, he clearly misrepresented himself to get on the field to trespass. He broke the law. Is it something that he's going to get rung up for? No, hopefully not.
My metaphysical question on that one would be, had he broken a law up until the moment he said he was a Mexican kicker and couldn't speak English? Up until that moment, had he technically broken a law, or had he just kept walking and showing a pass like Garth and Wayne in Wayne's World?
Sometimes when you walk into a place like you own it, they just allow you to continue operating. It's it's one of my tricks to when I have to use a public bathroom to do some business and I walk into a hotel because I know that the hotel lobby bathroom is going to be about as clean as anything I can find. I walk in there as somebody that's been staying at that hotel for a month and they let me in.
There you go. You got to act like you know what you're doing.
Get a little nod. Don't always give the nod because you're just the bell staff. You're not good enough for me.
That's what he did. That's what you have to do sometimes. If you missed that story, check out hornfm.com. Go to our page, the Shirts and Skins page, or just the front page there, and you'll see it, the story that Jeff Ward told us yesterday. And then go check out the 6 Minutes of Football podcast from Jeff, where he gets the full story from the guy that snuck into the A&M Alabama game, essentially. Snuck onto the field and then got into the locker room and took a selfie with Jimbo. It literally went to that level. All right, there's your college football update. Up next, Trey's got a TikTok update for you and where are we at in society. Could TikTok be harming your children in a way you're not even thinking about? Don't move. It's the Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
Because as it started, my guess was Gary, but
it does have a bit of a Gary sound.
Or is it Joe?
Gary has a hell of a falsetto. No, it's a female singer.
Oh, wow.
Brittany Howard, who was formerly at the helm of Alabama Shakes.
There you go.
This is off of their Sound and Color album. The song is called Future People. Yeah, she can hit the high note.
Goodness, that was unbelievable. Like, I'm not trying to dog Brittany Howard out, but if that had been a guy, I was going to be thoroughly impressed. I'm so impressed with her. Don't get me wrong. But right. You know what I mean? Like, that's still just unbelievable. That is an incredible ability to be able to hold that stuff. So that's Britney by herself, though? As a solo?
No, that's her with Alabama Shakes. That is Alabama Shakes. She is not with Alabama Shakes anymore. I think that band may be done for good. I feel like the drummer may have gotten caught up with a pedo scheme.
Ew.
And so she's doing her own thing now.
That's an impressive sound, man. Every time I hear her perform, see her perform, it's always impressive. Trey is going with a blues selection today, and it does include Miss Brittany Howard and Alabama Shakes on that one. What's that one again? Colors? True Colors?
Sounding Color is the name of the album. Sounding that song Color. Is Future People.
Good stuff there. All right, hope you're having a good Wednesday. And remember, this week we got a couple of special things for you. Always special on a Wednesday night when you got Under the Lights. If you love your high school football, that's from 7 to 8. 8 o'clock is Fight Night with Eddie and Jordan, talking all things fighting, the unscripted, planned kind, where everybody agrees to it and they close cages and go in rings. Then at 9... it is the scripted, agreed-to variety of the fighting, and that's Sports Guys talking wrestling with Stu and Justin as they cover the world of professional wrestling, which is going wild and crazy right now with all kinds of different options for you. So that is Wednesday nights. Tomorrow night, special edition of Longhorn Weekly with Chris Beard. If you love college basketball, if you're excited about this AP Top 5 team, get out to Pluckers, the campus location, tomorrow night at 7. Get out there. If you know students or if you are a student, get them out there for a live version of the show. Coach Beard would like to see you, would like to meet you, and would like to invite you out to some of those basketball games. All right, all that's going on, but we are also every day about this time trying to fix the world, or at least tell you what's going on in the world. It's Where Are We At in Society. Here we go.
Where are we at in society today?
All right, Chad, we need to not go anywhere specific necessarily, but take a broad look at what is happening with teenage girls across the country and across the globe.
All right.
Teenage girls across the globe have been showing up at doctor's offices with tics, that is, physical jerking movements and verbal outbursts, since the start of the pandemic. Movement disorder doctors were stumped at first. Girls with tics are very rare to begin with, and these teens had an unusually high number of them, which often developed suddenly. After months of studying the patients and consulting with one another, experts at top pediatric hospitals in the U.S., Canada, Australia, and the U.K. discovered that most of the girls had something in common. TikTok.
Wow.
According to a spate of recent medical journal articles, doctors say the girls had been watching videos of TikTok influencers who said they had Tourette syndrome, a nervous system disorder that causes people to make repetitive involuntary movements or sounds. Now, no one has tracked these cases nationally, but pediatric movement disorder centers across the U.S. are reporting an influx of teen girls that now suffer from similar tics.
Wait a minute. You're saying they're watching people that have the tics and then they themselves get a tic?
It's like some sort of spasm osmosis, apparently.
What?
Digital spasm osmosis. Donald Gilbert, a neurologist at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center who specializes in pediatric movement disorders and Tourette syndrome, has seen about 10 new teens with tics a month since March 2020. Before the pandemic, his clinic would see at most one a month, and now he's seeing 10 a month.
My God.
So 10 times, if not more than that. Specialists at other major institutions have reported similar surges. Since March 2020, Texas Children's Hospital has reported seeing approximately 60 teens with such tics, whereas doctors there saw one or two cases a year before the pandemic. At Johns Hopkins University Tourette Center, 10 to 20% of pediatric patients have described acute onset tic-like behaviors, up from 2 to 3% a year before the pandemic. This is a huge issue now, and it is being driven by an app that many teens and a lot of adults consider to be fairly innocuous.
Okay, so let me make sure I'm understanding you here. Are you saying they don't think that these children are faking a tic? They don't think they are affecting a tic for attention or anything else. They think they have literally developed it because they've watched someone on a video that has a tic.
Apparently so. So there are plenty of tick-like behaviors to witness on TikTok, according to this Wall Street Journal article. When doctors in the UK began studying the phenomenon in January, so going back 10 months now, videos containing the hashtag Tourette's, had about 1.25 billion views.
Wow.
A number that has since, so that was in January, since those sorts of videos with that hashtag have grown to 4.8 billion. So nearly 5 billion views of videos that have a hashtag Tourette's. Quote, the safety and well-being of our community is our priority, and we're consulting with industry experts to better understand the specific experience, according to a TikTok spokesperson.
Wow. I'm not even sure how to process that one. That is bizarre.
One doctor who specializes in these movement disorders, specifically in kids, says there are some kids who watch social media and develop tics, and some who don't have any access to social media but are also developing tics. I think there are a lot of contributing factors, including anxiety, depression, and stress. And one commonality amongst many of us over the last 19 to 20 months now is the huge increase in stress slash anxiety slash depression.
That is so bizarre. Like there literally becomes such a connection between you and the person that you're like, that's weird. And is it because it's short form and not a long form thing? Because like by that basic logic, if I watch a whole bunch of slasher movies in October, then I become a killer, right? Mm-hmm. If you're just using the basic logic of it, I'm watching something over and over again. Someone who has a particular activity, someone who does whatever. And then I become that. That is bizarre.
So we're going to bring up a specific instance now. Kayla Johnson is a 17-year-old high school senior in Sugarland, Texas.
Okay.
Or is it Sugarland?
That's Sugarland, yes.
How is that Sugarland? We go burn it and so many other things where we Texify it. How is that not Sugarland?
Because that's the most Texas way to say that, Sugarland. You say Sugarland like it's a special magical place.
All right.
Because it is. It's the place where my wife grew up. So you say it magical. So Sugarland.
So Kayla is a 17-year-old high school senior in Sugarland.
There you go.
She began developing tics last November after having been diagnosed with an inherited disorder that affects connective tissues. The severity and frequency of her tics worsened after she began taking medicine for the disorder, she said, and she actually developed new ones. One day, severe back spasms prompted her parents to take her to the emergency room. A doctor there suggested she might have a functional neurological disorder. When Kayla was released from the hospital, she said, the ER doctor suggested she see a therapist and a psychiatrist. Kayla, who years earlier had been diagnosed with an anxiety disorder, an ADHD, began seeing a therapist every week and at one point attended 5 weeks of intensive therapy. She was prescribed medication to treat both the anxiety and the tics, but they persisted. She was eventually referred to a movement disorder specialist at Texas Children's. When she saw him last month, he asked her about her social media use. She said that during remote school last fall, she had a hard time staying organized and turned to YouTube to find videos of other students with ADHD to see how they were coping. That led her to TikTok compilation videos featuring teens with ADHD or anxiety who also had tics. In one of the videos, she recalled, a woman who was baking had such bad tics that she threw eggs against the wall. In another, a girl appeared unable to control her arm movements and hit the people around her. Kayla's mother, Brandy Johnson, said the neurologist told her that the doctors were investigating the connection between patients' tics and social media.
Wow.
According to Kayla, I do think my tics may have been triggered by these videos, and then it spiraled into its own beast.
Wow.
Whoa.
I don't even know what to say. What you're describing is what I have been arguing against my entire life when it comes to media, entertainment, and its effect on people. You're arguing the complete other side of it, and you're blowing my mind. Unbelievable.
I'm just glad that that we don't necessarily have to suffer the effects of all the different names of social media. You know, like Facebook doesn't cause us to like get uglier in the face as we use too much Facebook because, boy, oh, man, I hope Justine's not listening right now.
Come on, man.
Because Justine would get very ugly very quickly based on how much Facebook she's looking at nights. But that's not the case, Chad. TikTok, the TikTok effect is not happening on social media. And is there a definition for the word Twitter? Is there a definition for the word Twitter?
A, let's not go down that path. And B, yeah, I don't want to think about what it would be if you could see on someone's face the amount of time they've spent on Facebook. I'm not sure what my wife would look like. I don't know what it would mean. Like, I don't know what it would be, but if you could tell by looking at somebody, my wife, I don't know what it would be. Would you blink blue? Would you have a big F that just paints on your face? She'd have all of it.
Well, according to wordnik.com, thankfully, we don't have the same issue with Twitter, because I really don't want to be the person walking around this planet lightly chirping everywhere I go.
No,
you know?
You don't want that. You don't want that.
Or nervously giggling about things, which is another definition of Twitter.
Man, may want to double check on your kids and see how much TikTok they are watching. My goodness. All right, coming up, your 2 o'clock hour, Ari Temkin, Dallas Cowboys Radio Network and Big 12 Radio on Sirius XM. We'll talk Cowboys, Longhorns, maybe a little Longhorn basketball as well. Hope you're having a good Wednesday. This is The Horn.